You are listening to Intellectual Thoughts of a Teenage Girl, Program 8, aired on Global Community Radio. I'm your host, Nicole Garland. If you have any comments or feedback for the show, please feel free to email me at intellectualthoughtsofateen@gmail.com. Also, if you have any questions or want to get more information about my show or how to download podcasts, that can all be found on intellectualthoughtsofateengirl.blogspot.com. Feel free to hit me up on Facebook or Twitter. My Facebook is Intellectual Thoughts of a Teenage Girl, and Twitter is @teengirlradio. So, last week I had Sean Lay on the show to talk about China, and I decided to do a second part. Sean is a flight attendant born in China who travels the world. He's been to so many places and loves to stop by his amazing hometown. As I've said before, I'd love to visit China someday, and instead of seeing it through my imagination for now, which ain't very good. Well, welcome again, Sean.
Thank you.
How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good.
That's good. I had a question for you. What are some tips you could tell my audience about learning Chinese?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, I think, we already have a lot of the same sounds in English as in China. Sometimes we don't realize it, but we really do. The one thing that trips people up in Chinese is the tones. There are 4 tones in Mandarin. I think there are like 9 tones in Cantonese. I know Mandarin. So there are 4 tones in Mandarin. I know Chinese as well, to an extent. But the 4 tones, you know, like, ah, 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 ah. People are like, oh, what is that? You know, they kind of, you know, well, first of all, just relax. I think sometimes when people are, a little bit drunk, tipsy, they might do better because, you know, you're more relaxed. The first tone is just a monotone, you know. You make a sound like a beep, beep, ah, that's it. You know, ma means mother, you know, ta means him or her, xia, like, you know, like shrimp or whatever, ba, it depends where you are, ba, like la ba is like a horn. So that's the first tone. The second tone is ma. People were like, oh, ma, ma, like, but it's just a question mark. You know, if you ever ask a question mark, what? That's the second tone. What? Ma? Ma? Ma means, you know, it could be like numb. Fa? You know, like a fine. And the third tone is fa. You know, like fa means law. And fa, you know, it's a little bit harder to describe, but it's more like a disbelief. Like a, huh? Huh? You know, not just like the second tone is more like a question, like huh. The third tone is like a disbelief, like huh. You know, there's more tonal, more visual, you know, in the Chinese language when it comes to characters and things like that. Which, you know, is a separate topic. But the fourth tone, ma, is just like a command, like a you're literally like you're telling your dog to sit, like sit. You know, nobody says sit. You know, we don't care. English speakers don't get confused ever when they say, you know, sit. You know, we're like, sit? 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 You know, like, we just say sit. And if we're not confused about English when we say sit to a dog, then why would we do this? Why do we do the same thing in Chinese? Because it's the same tone. It's like sit. So fa could be like, you know, hair. La, spicy. Wa, like socks. Sock. You know, so a lot of the tones, we already have it in the English language, so we just gotta look into our own vocabulary to learn it. And the best way to do it is just watch TV, you know, talk to Chinese people, listen to them. Sometimes you might not think that you learned it by watching a video, movie, or something like that in Chinese, where people just speak Chinese. And by the way, I want to use subtitles, and I'll explain later. The thing is that, you know, you can do that for like a while, like a couple years, thinking that you learned nothing, but then subconsciously you will, like, sometimes I think you might surprise yourself about how much you know from just by listening and observing. And even if you're not picking up these things, it's a win-win situation, because when you're not picking up the actual verbal languages, then you are learning body language, and you might get really good at that. So it's a win-win situation. You either get good at the language itself or body language. So you're always getting something out of it by observing, watching a movie like that, something like that in Chinese. And, you know, I mean, obviously you can watch something that you like. That's something that actually interests you, you know. Something that that will serve another purpose rather than just learning the language. For example, watch a movie, watch a documentary that you actually care about, so that by the end of it, you actually learn something by watching people speak Chinese. And also, another thing is that I do recommend actually when you learn Chinese or, you know, other languages too, you know, is to start with the swear words first, the bad words. And studies have shown that, you know, people, you know, a different part of your brain lights up when you're using swear words. Swear words are very emotional, so it leaves an imprint in your body and your mind when you say it, and making the language more natural. But it also, in the end of it, it also depends with the reason you're learning the language. Is it to show people that you know the language? Or is it to bond with people? Is it to do business? Is it to connect? Whatever it is, at the end of it, it has to be all sort of, you know, at least a little bit about trying to connect with people. So swear words would actually, you know, in the right situations, would actually bond you more than anything else. And I can tell you from experience that anything else, bonding with a foreign culture. And I'm not telling you to go to the president of China or president, you know, of another country and start telling them to, you know, F off. That's not what I'm saying. You know, you can choose not to say it, choose to be polite in different situations. But if you really want to bond with somebody, after you gain familiarity, then using certain slang, swear words, that builds an emotional bond. You know, someone that, there's a word in Chinese, wuqiji. Wuqiji means guest air, guest spirit, guest energy. And when you say thank you, some Chinese people will say wuqiji. It literally means don't be like a guest. Don't be like, you know, so polite. Mm-hmm. Actually, kuqi could also mean polite. So, to remind yourself, I guess, to be aware that, you know, you are learning language to bond with people. Not to, you know, just to learn language. Because the purpose of language is for you to understand other people better, to interact with other people, to connect with other people, to be in touch with other people, to give love, to give hatred, to show other people compassion, or, you know, things like that. And once you get the emotional aspects of a language, I think that you get very deep into it. I mean, people do, you know, I do have to say, because you're over the radio, people can't see me. You know, people do get surprised when they hear me speak English. They're like, oh, you shouldn't have been born in China, or you shouldn't have, you know, lived there, you know, wherever. Or they're like, oh, but you only come here when you're really young. The thing is, I speak Chinese with my parents. Still, and I still visit, go to China. I still talk Chinese with them. I still, you know, I visit China. I still keep in touch. So people find it hard to believe that I actually know Chinese. And some Chinese people actually, I guess, find it hard to believe that I live in the United States. Mm-hmm. So, but these are the tips I give people because I actually remembered how I learned English. And I learned it in a very natural way. I learned it in a very, you know, I think when it comes to learning a lot of things, you know, languages, anything. A lot of it has to do with just working on your psychological blocks. You know, it took a long time for me to be able to switch back between Chinese and English because I didn't think it was possible. I think it was too wild that, you know, anybody can do that until I met somebody who was able to do that. And he wasn't even Chinese. In fact, he didn't learn Chinese till he was in college. You know, that completely refutes the psychological theory that says, oh, you have to, there's a language acquisition period, you know, like, I think it's like 6 years old or something. I learned English when I was 8 years old. That's past that age, if I remember correctly. I mean, what the acquisition age actually is. So that guy learned Chinese when he was in college. His name is Doug Honoroff. He's a dialect coach. He's also a linguistic professor at Yale. And he speaks such a good Chinese that I jokingly say that he speaks Chinese better than me and my parents do. I mean, that's barely a joke. He is as good or better in grammar and things like that than me and my parents are. And, you know, because, like, just because you speak a language, just because you're native, doesn't mean you speak a language perfectly. You know, people say a lot of English speakers don't speak English, you know, perfectly, you know, in terms of grammar, things like I ax you, you know, things like that. But this guy, he speaks Chinese perfectly. He sounds like a Chinese TV reporter, and I know what they sound like because, you know, this, it's a TV. And he understands the jokes, nuances, you know, all the things that, jokes that you would only get if you understand the culture and the deeper parts of Chinese. And, you know, me and him, we translated, you know, the next episode of Cooter. I mean, some of it's just for, you know, comedy, you know, and it's a story behind it. It's not perfect translations, but, you know, it depends how you look at it, at least. And language is also about context, obviously. I say that, you know, as an interpreter and translator, professional, I'm actually, you know, an interpreter and translator, you know, by trade, as a part-time job. I say that nothing can be translated. I'm talking right now. I'm speaking English. You know, the audience, you guys are speaking English. You guys are English speakers, English understanders, whatever you want to call it. But I actually speak a different language than you do. Why? Because I could have, you know, different experiences than you do. I may say a phone. To me, it's an iPhone, but to you, it might be in a galaxy. So it's actually two different languages. But at the end of it, we all have common experiences somewhere. You know, sometimes I might say, you know what, I had a really bad childhood. Nobody else can understand me. But you know what, some people might go to war. They didn't have a bad childhood, but they might experience trauma elsewhere. There's still common backgrounds. We think we have different backgrounds, different language, but we actually do. I call it childhood trauma. Some other person call it, you know, war trauma, or you know, like separation anxiety, or some people might even, you know, like they might you know, somewhat pampered growing up, and they might, you know, didn't get the candy they want or something, and that feeling might be the same as, might be as traumatizing as someone who's going through a lot, you know. So we all have common experiences, we say it in different words. You know, I mean, a lot of it's, you know, it's also unsaid. My biggest tip, though, is just, you know, like, I think language is, you know, something that's, you know, as long as you go with the intention of understanding another person, connecting with another person, I think, you know, I think only good things will come out of it. But like I said, to summarize, first of all, you know, we already have a lot of the sounds in English as, actually all of the sounds in Chinese. The actual consonants, we have all of it and more in English. The tones, we have it in everyday language. You know, we watch the video in Chinese, which is something I noticed about almost every single good Chinese speakers that was not Chinese had one thing in common, is that they either lived in China or watched a lot of cheap TV. Of course, what led them to that is the interest in the first place. So, you know, you gotta have the interest, you know, obviously. So, if people just follow their own, you know, intuition, I think it'll lead them to the right places. But when you watch a video, whether you pick up the language or not pick up the language, you will get good at a language, either it's body language or Chinese. And also, it helps, you can drink a little bit. I mean, not to get drunk and have a problem, but just get a little bit relaxed. That might help you as well. And I think in the end, I think language is a spiritual thing. So whatever, you know, spiritual practices, you know, you have, whether it's, you know, whatever it is. I mean, religion itself is a language too. You know, I mean, they're all commonalities in all the religions. It's just that it's also kind of like a martial arts. You know, there's a saying that it's not about the martial arts style. It's about the martial art artist, because someone could be very good at jujitsu, or someone could be very bad at jujitsu. It's not jujitsu that gets the person being good. Same thing with the language. Someone could speak English, but could say something totally different in English, and say something totally, you know, different in a different way in English, in the same language. Same thing with religion, obviously. You could be a really good or whatever person in one religion, or you could be a really, really bad or whatever thing in another, you know, in the same religion. Or sometimes between two religions, it might be more common with two people than within the same religion between two people. So there is a, you know, I think a connection. There is a thing with spirituality and languages. You know, not to mention that once you work on your blocks, you know, what's holding you back, either through meditation or prayer or anything like that, I think languages comes naturally. And I think that's the way it's meant to be. And I think, you know, I wouldn't worry so much about, you know, memorizing words and stuff like that. You know, the tactics, it's a strategy that I think we should be more worried about in our language education. It's not about the grammar. It's not about the words. It's actually about what do you want to communicate? What's your interest? What do you want to do to connect with another person? Once you figure that out, I think everything comes naturally.
Wow. Thank you, Sean.
Hey, no problem. Yeah, hopefully that helps.
Yeah. You are listening to Intellectual Thoughts of a Teenage Girl, Program 8, aired on Global Community Radio. The voice you've been hearing for the past several minutes is my guest, Sean Lay, and I'm your host, Nicole Garland. If you have any comments or feedback for the show, please feel free to email me at intellectualthoughtsofateen@gmail.com. Any information you want to know about the show or catch up on podcasts, because there was a first part to this interview, so if you missed that, you can find it at intellectualthoughtsofateengirl.blogspot.com. Also, please feel free to message me on Facebook or Twitter. Intellectual Thoughts of a Teenage Girl is my Twitter, or is my Facebook, and my Twitter is @teengirlradio. So we're here again with Sean asking some questions about China. So Sean, I wanted to ask you, so in the last episode, you mentioned Cantonese and Mandarin, which are languages spoken in China. Are there any other languages that are also spoken in China?
Yes, I mean, they call it dialects more so.
Or dialects.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, it's a word that a dialect is, you know, less different than a language, you know. But that's the word that you would describe it. Yeah, I think they're like 50, if I'm correct. I'm not too sure, but if I have to make a guess, it's about like 50 official languages in China. There's Sichuanese, Mandarin, or sometimes I think they just say Sichuanese. You know, there's Beijing, they speak Mandarin, it's an official language. Taiwanese people also speak Mandarin, but they call it Wu Yu. Beijing people call it Putonghua. Cantonese. There are also a lot of ethnic tribes in China. Like Zhu is the word for tribe. Huizu, actually, interestingly, is the Muslim tribes in China. Huizu. Yeah, I think it's Huizu. There's Daizu. You know, all these tribes, and obviously they all speak their own dialects. And sometimes you might actually call them languages because they're so different. You know?
Wow, that's a lot of languages there.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
Okay, I sound like, you know, I was like, but. No, I didn't want to be mean, sound mean. The reason I want to say is that there is an official language in China, which is Mandarin. So every person in China, you're supposed to speak Mandarin, know Mandarin. I was in Shanghai one time, and there's some Muslim, you know, Chinese people. And I think they look Muslim, too. I mean, in terms of, like, the stereotypical Muslim Middle Eastern look. And I said to them, Assalamu alaikum, you know, it's like in Arabic, it's like, peace to you. It's a greeting, you know. With Muslims, but I forgot to give her money, and she said, "Oh, where's my money?" Assalamu alaikum, you know, my ass or something, you know, and I was like, "Okay, here's her money," and I thought it was kind of funny because, you know, I think I'm not sure what language she speaks with Huizu, with the Muslim in China. I want to say it's not Arabic, but I think I'm pretty sure they kind of have their own language, and. I wouldn't even say dialect because I think it's very different than Mandarin. But even Mandarin itself, you know, there's still accents, you know, like Taiwanese people sound different, you know, also have some different vocabularies. Like bicycle in Taiwanese is 脚踏车. It literally kind of means like, you know, foot pedal vehicle. And, But in Mandarin, bicycle is a 自行车, it means a self-propelled vehicle. And in Yunnan, the southern parts of China, they say 单车, it kind of means like individual vehicle. You know, I say vehicle because 车, there's, it just means, you know, a moving vehicle, you know, without a better... everything is 车, everything is more... Chinese feels more organized in its grammar. Like, for example, everything is 车, you know, bus is a 公共汽车, a car is a, you know, 小车, like a small car, small vehicle. You know, bicycle is a, you know, 自行车, stuff like that. So everything is a 车. So when you hear the word 车, you automatically know that something moving has wheels and moves people around. Whereas in English, like car, oh, okay, cool, car, what was a bus? You know, there's nothing in the word itself that tells you what a bus is, unless you know what a bus is. You've seen it, people tell you, or you figure it out. But in China, as soon as you hear the word 车, you know it's a vehicle. So there's things that about Chinese that actually makes... I'm sorry, this is a little bit off topic, but there's things in Chinese that actually makes it easier for people to kind of learn it, especially in terms of, like, logical, organized way of the language, you know, such as I just described. But yeah, there, you know, there are different languages out there, but Mandarin is the main language. That's... And when Hong Kong, oh, sorry, when Hong Kong became, you know, part of China in about 1996 or 1997, part of what they did is they had a program to teach Hong Kong people, how to, speak Mandarin, because they all speak Cantonese, but they had to speak Mandarin because of the whole, British Empire, you know, England returning Hong Kong to, you know, the Chinese government. So hopefully that kind of answers your question.
Yeah, Sean and I are always fighting over the mic and fighting over time. There's never enough time, especially for the show. So I wanted to ask you really quick, Sean, what is the predominant religion in China?
Officially, it's atheism. Because it's a communist government, they say that, you know, the whole notion that religion is the opium of the people, I think Mao said it, if I remember correctly. So there's no religion. But people, most people are not very religious that I met, at least in the cities like, like Chengdu, Shanghai, Beijing. But then, you know, there are people that practice martial arts or Buddhism, stuff like that. So yeah, you'll meet spiritual people here and there, but most people don't really care about it. You know, the most you probably hear in China about religion is like, you know, when I was a kid, this teacher was like teasing the students, like, hey, you know, you're so, you know, you're always late to class, or you're always, you know, not, you know, understanding what we're teaching. Why don't you go to Buddha, and the Buddha will make you smart and you come back. You know, but that's a joke. You know, she's not actual, like, talking about the religion. But it comes in our vocabulary a little bit. But if you go to the mountainous regions in China, yeah, you'll find temples where, you know, monks actually practice, you know, like actual Buddhism, you know, whatnot. And also, you know, martial artists here and there. Martial arts is technically kind of banned during the Cultural Revolution, if you know what that is. It's where the communist, you know, people... kind of like purged, you know, they kind of got rid of a lot of you know, the traditional culture and stuff like that. So they burnt down some temples. There was a Northern Shaolin Temple, there's a Southern Shaolin Temple, they burnt down the Southern Shaolin Temple. But the Northern Temple is what we know as the Shaolin Temple we see in movies and stuff like that. But even the Shaolin Temple, Northern Shaolin Temple, I've never been there though, but what I hear is that it's more business-like. Like the head monk drives a car, and you know the monks, you know, go on the internet and everything like that. It's very touristy, but then some people say it's still, you know, there's still that martial arts aspect to it. But generally speaking, officially, in what typical you would know as China, like Shanghai, Beijing, stuff like that, most people are not very religious. But if you go west a little bit, you know, obviously Tibet, you know, there's a lot of Tibetan Buddhism. You will find, if you look hard enough, you will find, you know, people like that. It's a lot about Israel. You know, it's like a lot of the religious folks, the Orthodox, are in New York, as opposed to, I mean, there's, but if you go to Israel, like I think about 70% of people are secular, but about 30% of the people are spiritual and, you know, everything. But if you look hard enough, there are, you know, Orthodox, you know, people, the rabbinate and everything in Jerusalem and places like that. So same thing in China. There are people like, you know, the Orthodox in terms of like Chinese religion, Chinese culture, you know, Taoism, martial arts, stuff like that. But there are few in comparison, and most people are like, you know, just secular. And I want to say it's actually similar in some regards to what I understand about, like, you know, Israel. You know, we think of Israel as this, you know, biblical, you know, very, you know, religious place, but most people in Israel would not call themselves religious, as in, like, they perform all the religious functions, things like that. But they, you know, but they might say they believe in God, you know, they're spiritual or meditate and or pray and things like that, just not in an organized fashion. So that is like China.
You are listening to Intellectual Thoughts of a Teenage Girl, Program 8, aired on Global Community Radio. My name is Nicole Garland with guest Sean Lay. If you have any comments or feedback for the show, please feel free to let us know at intellectualthoughtsofateen@gmail.com. Any information about the show or where to find podcast information for part one of the interview with Sean or a previous interview with Sean or any other episodes that I have on there, it can be found at intellectualthoughtsofateengirl.blogspot.com. I also have a Facebook and a Twitter. That Facebook is Intellectual Thoughts of a Teenage Girl, and that Twitter is at Teen Girl Radio. So I'm about to do the open forum question. Feel free to email your email or Twitter me your answers for the open forum question at Teen Girl Radio. And so the open forum question for Sean, again, is what is more important to you, career or family?
Oh, at first I thought you said Korea, but then, okay, career.
Got career. No, well, that's another topic to get into in another time.
Yeah, that's a good question. Right now, I would definitely say family. I think, yeah, definitely family. I think growing up, you know, coming from a Chinese immigrant family, my parents, because, you know, only the hard, you know, only the you know, the really, you know, go-getters, type A personality people kind of get out of China, because that's most of the immigrants that got out of China at that time. You know, the PhD students, really smart people, you know, like, you know, that were able to get out of China, because the, if you're not PhD or you're not whatever, it's really hard to get out of China.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, the 80s or 90s, maybe. Well, you know, like, around that time.
Yeah.
Just so, like, you know, I was, in, you know, I want to make my parents proud, you know, like most immigrant Asian families, and you know, I, but luckily my parents, you know, didn't, you know, say they want me to be a doctor and things like that, but they still want me to succeed, you know, go to college and everything like that, but personally though, you know, like, I mean, you're asking a personal question. Personally, you know, doing long story short, I think, yeah, for me personally, I would value family more than career. But at the same time, I do understand there are people out there that value career over family. And I think there should be a good balance. I think a lot of relationships, marriage, you know, happen in a way where either two people just get together and they both care about career and they just want to hang out, you know, but they don't really love or each other, they interact, and then they end up breaking up. And I'm talking about long-term, short-term relationships. You know, I'm not saying, I'm not advocating against short-term relationships, but okay, cool. I don't, you know, I'm not advocating against short-term relationships, but long-term relationships is something for people who value stability. And when it comes to stability, I do think that one person needs, you know, it's probably best if one person is more about career and one person is more about love, you know, one emotional, one, you know, one is more like, you know, logical and stable and things like that. You know, they say that, oh, you know, traditional marriages are, you know, all about, you know, like, it's not about love. Love shouldn't, you know, take place. I think it should be a balance. I think it should be a balance where a person understands, you know, career, another person understands family,
Yeah.
You know, and if, you know, all, you know, family oriented, and they want, all they want is love, then they get together, you know, it might be really cool in the beginning, you know, it might be a really fun hookup or whatever. But in the end, in order to be stabilized, I think there needs to be one person who's more grounded than the other person. So I personally value family more than career, but I think, I personally value family more, but I think people like me would have a lot to learn from people who value career more.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I would give up my career, even though I love it the most, just for my family. You are listening to Intellectual Thoughts of a Teen, Teenage Girl, Program 8. In the world, in this world where you think nobody cares, I do. Be you. Thanks for listening, and have a good night.